Well, I went to work for a small company called Hairlane Engineering, who offered me quite a bit more than Fieldings were paying me. And I went there as a machinist, and 6 months after that, he wanted to make me foreman. Because I was a skilled machinist, and there weren't many in that place. In fact, it's one of those odd things, there were 21 of us working there, and 12 of them were called Tony. We had to call them all by nickname, because if I shouted Tony, the whole bloody place is going
up.
So anyway, I worked there for a couple of years. Des Mills, Jim, something or other, two partners. They were quite a go-ahead company for their size, really. They also owned a machinery selling business. And they quoted for everything, because I remember the guy who did all the quotes said to me, "We quote for everything. If we had it all, we couldn't cope with it. But we work on the fact we're only going to get a percentage." But the advantage of having a machinery sales place at the back, if you quoted for something and you got it, and you didn't have a machine on the floor, you could almost certainly jack one from outside that was for sale. You know, plug it in, wire it in, do the job, and then sell it or keep it if you wanted to. So we could do anything, and we did. And in fact, I made quite a lot of money there for the time, because another thing they had, I'll wander on with this, they had a surface grinder called a Lumsden, which oddly enough they had at Fieldings as well, a segmental surface grinder. Now nobody had a clue how to work this thing, bar Muggins. And there was a company close called Metal Forming or something that sold sort of half an inch thick plate, cut into all sorts of shapes and sizes you liked. But they used to buy the plate in fixed sizes, half inch, three quarters or an inch. So if somebody wanted it thinner, we'd grind it down.
Oh, right, yeah.
But of course, I had it weighed up and I knew exactly what the rate was. I could set this thing going and go home and have my dinner. But come back and it was nearly ready to take off. But he paid me for all those errors because he didn't know what I was doing. So it was actually quite a well-paid job in that respect.
Yeah.
But he made me foreman in the end. And then Des and Jim obviously decided to split because no partnerships are that perfect.
Yeah.
And Des was going to keep the machine shop and Jim was going to do the sales. I think he called it Crown Sales, Crown Machinery Sales. But I didn't know this. I mean, I didn't know this until after. But anyway, one day, me and Jim had a row and he sacked me.
Right.
So, in the morning. But by lunchtime, I had another job. I mean, that wasn't a problem. But the next night, he came round and offered me a job in his Crown place. So what the bugger had done was sack me so he could take me on somewhere else. But as he hadn't told me that, and I thought it was underhand, I told him, probably a mistake, but I did it.
Yeah.
And I went to work from there. As I say, I had a sack. I went to work there for Impregnated Diamonds.
Oh, right, yeah.
In Tufley.
Yeah. These are all names that, you know, from bring back memories. Yeah, I mean, Hair Lane Engineering, they used to do work for Fieldings, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
And all sorts of other people.
They used to do a lot of work for Ranks.
Oh, right, yeah.
And that was the first place I went to go back to that had anything like semi-automatic machinery.
Yeah.
They had BSA cam-operated machines that one set would grind away forever. And at the time, they did a lot of work for Ranks, who were, at that time, of course, making printers and copiers.
Yeah.
So that the workflow was pretty big. So they were very, very busy.
Did you, talking about Ranks, another person we interviewed recently, who is ex-Fieldings, was
John Lewis. Yeah.
John Lewis went from Fieldings to Ranks, and he became... Was it senior production engineer or something like that down there?
Did he really?
So I just wondered if you bumped into him at any time.
No, but oddly enough, they did offer me a job.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because when I got to be foreman, I was really then a jack of all trades.
Mm.
If they wanted someone to quote, I'd go. If they had a quality program, I'd go. If they had a delivery problem, I'd go. So I was whatever the flavour of the day. So if I go to Ranks for some... Oh, that was for a quote. That wasn't a problem. I don't think we ever gave Ranks a problem. They were too important a customer.
Yeah.
And the volume was too big. And it was simple work.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't need brain surgery. Once you set them up, they just rolled off and you deburred them and sent them. So I went up there a few times to look at this and that and other things. And I got no idea what his name was. But he said, come in and have a cup of tea. So I went in and had a cup of tea. And he said, did I want a job as a production?
Yeah.
And I said, no, I don't. It was too far for me.
Yeah.
You know, 19 miles away.
Yeah.
Although one of my friends used to work there, and he used to run there three times a week, run there and run home.
Wow, crikey.
To keep fit.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to go in a car, even on to run.
But there were quite a few ex-Fieldings people. As Fieldings shrank, if you like, quite a lot of people went to Ranks that we've spoken to. And I can't remember all the names, but...
Jim Richards, an attrition.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Jim
Richards.
Jim
Richards.
And anyway, there's quite a lot of people ended up at Ranks.
Quite a lot went to Doubters as well.
Yes. We'll get on to Doubters in a minute. Okay, so where were you just now? You were at...
I was at Impregnated Diamonds.
Impregnated Diamonds, that's right. How long were you actually there?
Not very long. It's not a company I admired at all. They were... I mean, Fieldings wasn't bad, but these were terrible. If you worked on a shop floor, you were a nobody. Mm. I mean, they had a phone box just outside the gate. And if you worked in the office, you could walk out and use the phone. If you worked on a shop floor, you couldn't. Mm. You know, you weren't allowed out of the factory. And they were very dated in their methods and their approach. I went there, and obviously, and oddly enough, Pete Mundy went at the same time. Pete Mundy and I went, and no end of changes we could see to make it better. In fact, one of the jobs I was given was making saw blades for the radio industry, and they were 1,500 thick.
Wow.
Stainless steel circles, about so big. Mm. And I used to machine them in batches of 100 at a time. They came in squares.
Right.
Used to put them on and machine the outside, machine the inside, and turn them off. And the bloke who did them before, whose name was Ticker Cornwall, it used to take him all day to do 100, and his yield was about 40. The rest were damaged.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I said, when he gave it to me, I did a couple like this, and I said, we ought to do this, we ought to do this, we ought to do this. All of which they turned down because I was a newcomer and didn't know what I was talking about. All of which I did anyway.
Mm.
So then I was doing 100 in about 4 hours. Mm. And my yield was 90 to 95%. And we did several, and I did several of those things, but it never changed. So I thought, this isn't the place for me.
Yeah.
So then I went to be a die maker, an extrusion die maker.
Where was that then?
That was Service Aluminium.
Oh, no, I haven't heard of that one. But there's quite a few die makers in the Gloucester area.
There were lots of die makers in the Gloucester area, And of course, their big advantage was they were very, very busy. And their pay was unbelievable compared to what I was on.
Oh, right.
They really did pay. And the other thing is, bearing in mind that my first wife never worked and I had a child, you could work whatever hours you like.
Oh.
I mean, I used to go in at 7 o'clock in the morning and leave at 7 o'clock at night. And that was very often Saturday and Sunday as well.
Crikey, yeah.
But you didn't get a rate change for Saturday and Sunday, but you could work it.
Yeah.
I mean, at the rate they were paying, it wasn't bad at all.
Yeah.
But that was the place where if someone sent an order in on a Monday morning, they had the die delivered on a Wednesday, ready to press.
Very
good. So, I mean, it was all go. You couldn't hang about. And I worked there for some time.
So, again, there must have been a Fielding connection with this, was there? Because, obviously, Fieldings were making the extrusion presses, and you were involved in dies. Did you ever get, you know, involved with Fieldings at all?
Not in that respect, I didn't. But when I left Doubters, I'll jump a bit here. I worked for a company that made electric light switches, among other things, electronics, electric bits, and they had a new contract for a fairly big electronic gadget. Please don't ask me what it was, with a big heat sink behind it to take the heat away. And the quote for the die and the extrusion was extraordinary. So I said to the guy, let me go up and talk to him, because I know how these things work. Mm. You know, I know what it is to make a die, because I've made them, and I know what it is to watch, to see them being extruded.
Yeah.
And I think I knocked 60% off the price and 40% off the delivery time. I thought I was a magician. But that was the only no. And apart from that, I knew how the extrusions were made, obviously, and I knew how the dies were made. But there was no direct contact between Fieldings and the die makers.
So how long were you there then, Mike?
I don't know, probably 3 years.
Yeah.
Probably 3 years, yes. And then...
Yeah.
this is where Doubters come into it.
Yeah.
And then I was poorly. I had acute follicle tonsillitis, whatever the hell that is. But anyway, that's what the doctor said I had.
A bad stroke, was it? Yeah.
I couldn't go to work. And of course, in those days, and at that place, you didn't get paid if you weren't working. So two things happened. When I went back, I got a hold of the three bosses and negotiated a deal where we paid a little bit and they paid a lot. So there was some sort of sick pay for all,
oh, really?
Which went very well. But then not very long after that, run into Dave Andrew again. And he said, are you still working on the shop floor? And I said, yeah. And I said, funny enough, I've just been ill. And he said, well, if you work in an office, they pay you.
Mm.
Which I had never realised. So I was mulling this over, and how old was I then? I was probably 33 then, 32 or 33. And I was beginning to wonder, belatedly, what I should do with my life rather than work handles. Not that I didn't like being a machinist, it's just that what else should I do or what else could I do?
Yeah.
And at that time, Doughty's were advertising, it was Messier Doughty then, might even have been Doughty Roper, Doughty Roper, were advertising for planners. No, I didn't have a clue what a planner was. I've never worked in an office in all my life. So up I go, and I was interviewed by Ray somebody, and he got the drawings out, a few drawings out. How would you make this? How would you make that? Bread and butter, no problems at all. So I said, well, you know, I didn't give him sort of all the grim facts, but I said I'd set it up in the centre and I'd drill a hole in it and I'd turn the OD and I'd part it off, and we went through a bit of milling and a bit of grinding. So a bit later on, I had an offer of a job.
Mm.
So off I went, and that was quite poorly paid, being in an office. So I went back to being a machinist evenings and weekends, which worked okay.
Oh, so you're working at Doughty's in the office, but also as a machinist somewhere else.
Evenings and weekends as a machinist, yeah. A place called Tolgar Engineering. There was another fielding man, Laurie Jackson. But his brother, Bill Jackson, was a Doughty man, although I didn't know that at the time. But working for Laurie there, so I did that for a while.
Yeah.
And I must say, I quite enjoyed that, but I was really struggling money-wise. And I wondered if I should go back to die making. Now, how long had I been? If I can go back to Doughty's ways in those days, if you went as a planner, you were a trainee for 2 years.
Wow.
Then if you were any good after 2 years, you got to be a grade one or a grade two planner.
Mm.
And after 2 years, you got to be a grade two planner. And at some time in the future, if you were very lucky, you got to be a charge hand. And then after that, you'd be a section leader.
Mm.
So, I mean, it was quite a long and convoluted business. Although I went there, much to my surprise, on a 9 months training plan.
Mm.
This Ray said I'd need a 9 months training plan. So off I went and I had my training. And then I worked in the office for a little while, and the tornado came along.
Oh, right. The aeroplane you're talking about.
The aeroplane came along, which had been an experimental for some time. The first 11 sets were made under experimental auspices, and then as production started to roll up, it came into production.
So this is the landing gear?
This is the landing gear, and I was given the project to be the landing gear planner.
Oh, wow.
To be the tornado planner.
Yeah.
And I did get involved in quite a lot of other things at that time, hydraulics. Only sort of a feel of it, but I got involved in it slightly. And although I was enjoying that, I was still wondering what I ought to do. And then one day, my boss, Fred Bushell, Fred Bushell, said to me, I put in for a job for you. I said, oh yeah, Fred, what have you done that for? He said, well, it's time they understood who you were. So I've applied for you. When the interview comes with his boss, with the planning manager, I'll come in with you. So
it sounds to me like this was, how can I put it, sorted out beforehand, maybe.
Well actually, no, it was, but not, because...
Yeah.
So in I go to the planning manager's office, in comes Fred with me, and Fred says, this was outside of the planning auspices, I don't know where he was, but he said, Mike doesn't really want this job, but he wants you to know he's ready to move on and he's ready to be promoted.
Oh, right.
So that was the interview done. I went back to working, and then, I don't know, 3 months, 4 months after that, still doing most of the tornado, I got called into the director's office, and I remember the drawing. It was an F-28 main undercarriage. I had the main undercarriage drawing.
So, what sort of plane is the F-28?
It's a Fokker, the Fokker 28.
Oh, right.
It went out of business.
Yeah,
we did the undercarriages.
Right, right.
For the F-27 and the F-28. So I get called into the director's office, whoever it was, Fred said, go and get the drawing, whatever it was. So then I go to get the drawing, and in I go with it. And I'm in there for 2 hours. We talk about the drawing for 10 minutes. Some sort of problem, how would you resolve this problem, and what would you do with this, and what would you do with that, and then where did I come from, and who was I married to, and what did, all the rest of the business. All of this was very subtly done. It wasn't until I went out, because I mean, working in office is a talking environment, is it?
Yeah.
It's not like working in a machine when you're stood there at the handles all day.
Yeah.
It's all talk. So it wasn't until I came out some time later that I thought, that was a serious conversation, and I'm not sure what. But then A week after that, I was called back into the office. We want to offer you the job as supervisor for hydraulics. Now, that was, I'd missed the grade one, I'd missed the grade two, I'd missed the charge hand, and yeah. I'd gone straight to section leader.
Oh, right.
It caused a lot of feeling.
Oh, right.
Lots of the pretenders there who thought they were going to be promoted next were quite arsy about it. And I don't blame them for it.
Yeah,
but
that's
not my problem, is it?
No, you were doing the job, and you could do the job.
So I went,
So did you stay doing that, you know, for some time, or did you move on at Doughty's, or what happened next? Because again, I don't know what age you were then, 40s or something maybe?
Not 40, I don't think.
Crikey.
I think I was 33 when I went there, and by the time I was 35, I was a supervisor.
Oh, right.
It really was
quick.
A paraleap, yeah.
Yeah.
And I did that probably 4 years, I don't know, probably something like it. And I embraced a lot of things in those days, you know, lots of changes. Then I went to work for inspection and quality, which was good, but I didn't enjoy. I was responsible for the quality in goods inwards, heat treatments, non-destructive tests, all those sort of places. And I learned an awful lot about it. But it wasn't a job that I enjoyed at all. So then I was offered the job as deputy planning manager.
Right.
Because Fred Bushwick retired and there was no one else there that they thought was good enough. So back I go. And I did that for a while.
So this is planning the production and all the way through for
But you have to understand what a planner was. He wasn't a planner in the respect that he wrote manufacturer's layouts.
No.
Although I could do that.
Yeah.
In some ways, the planning department then was quite a powerful tool, but also a jack of all trades.
Right.
If something went wrong in the factory, it was always the planners who were hauled out to do it.
Yeah.
You know, we issued all the drawings, we issued all the modifications, we issued all of the manufacturing instructions to the buying department to put out for subcontractors. So, as well as keeping the operations, if you like, up to date.
So that's manufacturing lead times. Yeah.
All that sort of nonsense.
So you're really organising the factory.
Oh yeah, in many ways.
Yeah, yeah.
If it didn't go through planning, it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
That was the thing. That was the gateway to the factory.
Yeah.
The drawings came to the planners. The planners issued them out for manufacture.
Yeah.
Either to the shop or to subcontractors or to the purchasers.
Yeah.
So it was, and at the time, deputy planning manager, and I did that for a couple of years, I guess, and then the planning manager was moved and someone else was moved in over me, which, thinking much about it, and he only lasted about 6 months and he was gone, so I was given the job.
Yeah.
And then at the time we were just putting computers in.
Right.
Or better computers.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I remember the introduction of computers rather than doing everything. Your maths was wonderful, really, when you're working things out without the computer, but then computers came along and spoiled it all, I think.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I was very involved with that. And, of course, at the time, when I took the planning department over, I think I probably had something like 98 people working for me in the planning department.
Yeah.
But by the time computers were up and running, that had shrunk to about 50.
Wow.
Because the computers took so much of it away.
Yeah, yeah.
And made it so much easier, I must say.
Until they went wrong.
Until they went wrong.
So when you say supplies, is that
purchasing manager?
Yeah, buying in all the raw materials, etc.
Well, the finished parts.
All right, right.
By putting them out for quotation and getting them in on time, and it was about at the time £2 million a week, something like that.
Yeah,
quite a big turnover.
Well, the quality of the. That what you were making there was very high. I've personally had a tour of the factory, and so you're not talking about, you know, cheap little bits of fabrication.
No.
You're talking
no.
extremely high quality,
extremely high quality,
expensive stuff.
Yeah. And although I saw it happen, I wasn't directly involved in it. Many of the subcontractors' quality and output was improved dramatically. Because of Doughty's, because of course they had to.
Yes.
If you don't do it, you don't get it.
Yeah.
But they did work hard at it, but it was a team effort.
Yeah.
You know, they wouldn't have been where a lot of them wouldn't be where they are today, if they hadn't have listened to Doughty's and played the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because at that time we used to send engineers, quality, all over the place to help.
Yeah.
To make sure they do it properly.
Yeah.
So I did that for a while, and then we, then